balls in my hands.
On your home for Kansas City sports, 96.5 The Fan.
Oh, yeah, football, football.
From potholes to pop-ups, we got it covered.
Hey!
Here's Bob Fesco.
Take a bite out of my ass.
And Dusty Likens.
Big nuts.
Back at it here on 96.5 The Fan. It is Fesco and Dusty. Mac Morey in today. Dusty is off. We'll be back tomorrow. I just noticed my shirt here matches the urinal screen color.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, go look at the urinal screen today, and it matches. I'll be honest with you. We got a new urinal screen in there today. I like the fresh scent of a new urinal screen.
I like it, too.
Right? It smells nice. It smells like watermelon.
No, it's good.
Right now.
Oh, watermelon.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, go take a whiff of the
luxury.
Urinal screen. Yeah,
okay.
It's good. Yeah, right now. And then later in the day, obviously, once everybody goes, it will not smell as fresh.
No, it will not.
In there, but it is the same color, this light green that I'm wearing today.
It kind of has more spray back sometimes with the screens.
Let me ask you this. Totally, I mean, this is, I can't believe I'm going to raise this question, but I bet the text line goes nuts, Mac, okay? When you pee in a urinal, do you pee against the back wall of the urinal or onto the screen?
Yeah, I'm going back wall. I'm going bottom, back wall, 6 inches above the screen.
Okay, so you're above the screen. Text line, Jay Southland, Tow Service text line. They love sponsoring this, right? Where do you pee?
Yeah.
In a urinal, do you go for the back wall or do you aim at the urinal screen?
I think if you're aiming at the screen, you're getting splash.
You're
back.
Getting splash. You're getting splash,
yeah,
back. Right.
You gotta be careful.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you. Lower to the back wall.
Yep. Lower back wall. Maybe.
And it's quieter that way too. You ever walk in and somebody's peeing on a urinal screen? It sounds like water's running, and it's the middle of a rainstorm.
Yes, exactly.
That's
why I thought someone was peeing loudly on Friday, and then it was like, no, it was just our bathroom flooding.
Oh,
upstairs.
So, yeah. I missed that on Friday.
Yeah, you guys had both left, and I went to go take a pee before we left, and yep.
Yeah.
That's what it was.
Well, there you go. So what's the text line saying on that? Where do you pee? You know, if you're American in the living room, what are you in the bathroom?
European.
There you go. Get bent. Before we get into the most important player on the offense, Keenan Allen signed with the Colts overnight. I know that's a kind of a late developing story this morning here, but a one-year deal worth over $8 million with the Indianapolis Colts. And, you know, if they're holding out for Tyreek Hill, whatever. At this point in time, I'm not interested in Tyreek Hill being a part of this team at all. And would I have been interested in Keenan Allen? Yeah, probably so.
For sure.
But I also like to see the way that some of these young guys are starting to produce. And again, they don't have any money to go out and sign Keenan Allen. You know, they're very tapped at where they are right now from a cash standpoint this season. So it's not like they have the money that they can go out bid. They put all of that into Kenneth Walker. They're going to invest into these young guys, and they really think that the coaching change is going to make that difference with this team. And so I don't really see them adding anybody, you know, at that wide receiver position at this point in time, right? Things can change. Guys get cut. Rosters change all over the NFL. There may be a trade that you can't resist. Who knows? But at this point in time, just judging based, and I judge it based on what I saw Andy say yesterday when he was asked about Chad O'Shea and DeMarco Murray, the new coaches that are part of this organization. And he said yesterday, he goes, I love the teaching that these guys are doing. And I heard him say that,
great.
And I'm like, that's the stuff that we've been missing.
Yes.
Look, at the end of the day, when you look at coaches, and Andy will tell you this, because I'm stealing this from Andy Reid, okay? This is a direct steal from Andy Reid. Coaches are teachers. And if you aren't a good teacher, you will never be a good coach, because it's all about how you communicate that message and put people in the right position to be good. You've had classes in your life where you didn't jive with the teacher, right? Or you didn't understand what the teacher was doing.
Yep.
Or maybe the teacher wasn't that good and you didn't do well in that class. But if you had it with a different teacher, you probably would have done better, right? And they're just like anything in life. Just because you're a teacher or a doctor doesn't mean you're good at what you do. Vip. No, I kid. And the only reason I say it is because he's up in Vegas right now wandering around, right?
Oh, let's go.
I mean, everybody,
I love it.
Everybody finishes first or last in their graduating class. You still call them a doctor. You still call them the teacher. What I'm getting at is, just because you have that title of teacher or doctor doesn't mean you're good. There are great teachers out there. There are good teachers out there. There are exceptional teachers out there. And then there are really bad teachers out there. And so when you look at the coaching ranks right now, Andy Reid is one of the greatest. He's teacher of the year, right? That is teacher of the effing year. But on his staff, he had a couple of guys last year that were teachers that probably needed to not be back. You know, they didn't do a good job in teaching. And so he went out and found a great teacher at that wide receiver position. And that's what he was talking about with Chad O'Shea yesterday. I was just smiling listening to it because, yes, that's what I want to hear. We finally have a teacher in there that's going to teach these guys how to play that position in the NFL. We all need help in life. No matter how good we are at what we do, we need the assistance of others. And to have Chad O'Shea and DeMarco Murray that can teach these guys now what they were lacking, I think it changes so much. The dynamic is going to be so much better.
Yeah, it's those behind-the-scenes changes that aren't going to show up in fantasy drafts. They're not going to show up on the national, you know, get-ups or first takes. But we know right here in Kansas City just how massive. And if you're going to training camp, I mean, you're seeing it and you're hearing the changes that have happened these last few months inside the building. It's going to take a big, big shift, especially with how young of a team. You talk about those skill players and the wide receiver and the running back room for DeMarco Murray. Those are young guys. They're all still learning. Coaches are still learning. And so when you've got a guy like Andy Reid as the leader who's teaching the teachers, too.
Right.
I mean, it's really important. It's going to have a big ripple effect on this team.
You know, coaching the coaches, teaching the teachers. And, you know, in college, I took a class. It was African-American Women's Studies. And I took that class because you have to take a lot of different stuff, you know, to broaden yourself. And I was like, I don't know anything about this. The teacher that I had was so dynamic. I enrolled in another class from hers next semester.
That's awesome.
Because she was so awesome. And I had a connection to that teacher, right? You just sometimes you just have that connection where it doesn't matter what, because that doesn't sound like much of it. Like African American women's studies, does that sound interesting to a 22-year-old kid or a 21-year-old kid or an 18-year-old kid? No, it doesn't sound that interesting. But she made that class so interesting that I was signing up for more. And so I hope Connor Embry has that same effect now, especially in Rashee Rice and Xavier Worthy, Mac, who were here through all of this. I hope they're having an awakening right now and going, oh, okay, now it makes sense. And you've seen kids, whether it's in your classroom, your own kids, teachers, they talk about it all the time. When the kid gets it and has the I got it moment, it's one of the most rewarding things for a teacher or a parent. And I hope these wide receivers, Mac, are having that I got it now moment with Chad O'Shea.
Which kind of brings us into our topic, who's the single most important player for fixing the offense this year, and I do think it's Rashee Rice. Like, yeah, I think Ken Walker's going to be massive, but he's not fixing the offense. He's going to fix the run game. But to fix the offense again, this offense will go through Patrick Mahomes. Mm-hmm. And 15's not going to be my answer because, of course, he's the most important. He's the quarterback.
Right.
So, like, come on, we can get past that, and we know what he's going to do. Rashee Rice, we need to see him improve. We need to see him take that step, whether that's on his own volition or by teachings from Chad O'Shea. We need to see him get better, stay out of trouble, play all 17 games, and have a 1,200-yard type season. He needs to be the lone 1,000-yard receiver on this team because no one else is capable of really doing it. We've seen what he can do against zone coverage. We've seen what he can do with the football in his hands, the yards after the catch. All that stuff's great. That burst, that explosion needs to stay after this knee injury. I've got some growing question marks as far as that's concerned with some of the clips that I've seen in training camp. And it's just clips in training camp, but is that explosion still there to the level that it was last year, the year before? Because Cyrus Allen is awesome. We're really excited about him, right? It's great. Fifth-round pick, looks like, from Brett Veach. Might have found a diamond in the rough. I don't think he's a number one wide receiver, at least yet, and I don't really know if that's in his future. Xavier Worthy, I think that's a number two at best wide receiver. So you've got two twos. Can Rashee Rice be that one that Mahomes can count on? Away from Travis Kelce and away from Ken Walker, you need a wide receiver, and Rashee Rice has shown in flashes, shown in even spurts for a month or so that he can do it, but against man coverage, because now the book's out on Rashee Rice. He can kill it in a zone, he can kill it off a screen pass, a little slant route against zone, and he can take a ball and go. But all right, if you've got a good corner who's just going to say, hey, I'm going to put my hands on you, I'm going to be in your jersey, I'm going to be on you, do you have the ability, do you have the fundamentals?
And that's where the teaching comes into play.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
Exactly
right. How to get off this guy. You know, here's what I'm going to teach you because I've been doing it for 17 years. When a guy does this, you do that. And somebody who hasn't had, I hate to use the he didn't play in the NFL because I don't think that matters. But I do think what matters is understanding and how to coach and work your way up, mm-hmm. and not be coaching a position that you have no business coaching. And, and that's where Connor Embry was for the last couple of years. And so now having somebody in there with the ability to teach and lead is going to be so, so much more beneficial, because like I always struggled in math, but I went to a math tutor and they would teach you tricks on how to do stuff. And that opens your eyes and opens your mind a little bit. And so if you got a guy like Connor Embry who doesn't know the tricks, he can't teach the tricks. That's why, you know, knowledge is the most important thing in the world and why education is always going to be undefeated. For me, it is Kenneth Walker, though. Yeah. And I'll tell you why coming up next.
Good morning, Kansas City. It's Kyra Stonga, and you're listening to Fesco and Dusty on your home for Chiefs football, 96.5 The Fan.
All right, we're back here on 96.5 The Fan. Bob Fesco, Mac Morey with you. Dusty off today, back tomorrow. And we were talking in our last segment about the single most important player for fixing the offense this year.
Yes, we were.
For the Kansas City Chiefs. We'll get back into that in just 1 second, but we got some money to give out, huh?
Yes, we do. This year we've partnered with KCUC, who's donating $50 to the Prostate Cancer Foundation. For every home run the Boys in Blue hit this season, 1 in 8 men will face prostate cancer. Early detection saves lives, and at KCUC, Kansas City's largest, most experienced, and most advanced urology team, you see the best in KC schedule today at kcuc.com. Right now, $6,300 total
cool.
have been raised with 126 home runs last night. Bobby Witt hit one, and Cags and Bobby had a night. They were, 6 for 9 or something like that, combined 5 RBIs, 5 runs. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, really good night last night for the Boys in Blue. And you said earlier that the most important person to the rebirth of the offense is Rashee Rice.
Yep,
it's Rice. Hard to argue, you know, that. I'm going, though, with Kenneth Walker III, K-9, as he's called here in Kansas City. Yes. And the reason I go with him is because he really does have the ability to change the entire dynamic of this offense. And what I mean by that is actually being a person that can run the football changes the dynamic of this offense. And, you know, we've talked so much, and I'm kind of, quite honestly, Mac, getting tired of talking about how predictable that offense was last year and how bad it was last year and teams calling them out what they were going to do because they were so predictable.
Yep.
And I think that's where the Kenneth Walker thing changes just about everything for this team. No longer can they be that predictable team. No longer can they be that team where everybody just drops 8 and says, screw it, we're not going to, you know, worry about the run because you're not running the football. And so I think right now Kenneth Walker to me is the most important addition to this team to take that offense to the next level, because if he's not a guy that's getting his and doing his thing, then I don't know that this offense can be successful. I'll even take it one step further. I think it's the entire running back group right now.
Yeah.
They all, and look, they, I'll be honest with you, man, that running back room looks as good as it's ever have against with Andy Reid. I'm whispering
easily.
I don't want to say it out loud. But does that not look like the best running back room you've seen
100%,
under Andy Reid?
100%. 1 through 4. I mean
DeMarcado may not even make this team.
Yeah, depending on how many running backs they want to roster. DeMarcado, I think he will make the team just because of the pass pro, and we know how important that is to Andy Reid and those guys.
Yeah.
But yeah, I want to see
Johnson. They're not taking Tyrone Tracy here, I'll tell you that.
No.
Swing and miss on a block.
No, I want to see, exactly. I want to see Breshard Smith. I want to see Emmitt Johnson out there. And then, yeah, Ken Walker, top 12 running back in this league. Yeah, this is by far the best running back group 1 through 4 we've had. It's honestly not even close.
No, it's probably not.
Yeah, different atmosphere.
Isn't it amazing how they just revamped that position?
Yes,
like overnight? Just what they did 5 years ago when they revamped the offensive line, and 9 years ago when they revamped the entire defense.
The defense, yep.
They do a great job at revamping positions that need to be revamped, and they did it with the running back position. It's night and day. There's nobody back other than Breshard Smith.
Other than Breshard Smith, who,
from last season,
who maybe should have played more. I don't know how good of a running back he is, but he's damn good receiving back. When he's get the ball in his hands, mm-hmm. he can make men miss. He's extremely quick. I love his vision, so I'm excited to see his progression. Yeah, this revamping maybe took a second too long, a tick too long for my liking. But again, yep, Brett Veach went in there and did what he needed to do, and I'm really excited about this draft class and the running back room. And yeah, again, you know me, I'm the Veach criticizer usually on this show, but he's doing really well right now so far. I really like what I'm seeing out of the guys that he's brought into this team. We've got some text, Bob, on where they pee in the urinal.
Oh, yes.
As we brought up your back to the important stuff.
Yeah, the important stuff. Yeah, my shirt matches the new urinal screen. Yes. So I asked, do you pee against the back wall of the urinal or do you pee into the urinal screen?
Yes, and we both said back wall, lower back wall above the screen.
I like the urinals with the B that's in it because I usually aim for the B.
Aim for the B, yes. Yeah. Okay, yeah, I'm glad we're all doing the same thing. Yeah, 816 says one of the bottom corners. I think a corner is a good call a lot of the time. Always hit the back wall from the 417. We were talking about how we also like to maybe pee a little quieter, and if you pee on the cake, on the pad, it's just kind of loud and splash. 913 says loud and proud. Good for you. Down to the right, no splash, and it's silent. I like that. I like that.
I'm left-handed.
Forgot about that. At work, everyone aims below the urinal. Saturate the shoes. No sandals. It is ridiculous the amount of pee that's not inside the urinal.
I always wonder, do you do this at your home?
No.
If you're peeing on the floor at work, are you peeing on the floor at your home?
816 says, bros, I just pee on the floor. F it. So, yeah, I guess some people are. About an inch slightly above the screen. Yeah, so most people are like us. Aim for a corner, aim above the screen, that bottom side of the urinal. We also just talked about Keenan Allen signing. You mentioned K9. We're talking about this offense, important players that can fix this offense this year. Keenan Allen now just signed to the Colts, a one-year deal up to $8.3 or so million. Dollars. I just think I'm with the Chiefs in a staying pat. That's fine. They better hope they're correct, and they better hope no one gets injured in that wide receiver room, because we're an injury away to one of those top two or three guys from having some serious scares, and then having.
But so is everybody at this point, you know.
To some extent, but they don't have we don't have that true number one unless Rashee Rice proves otherwise right now. So you're already working with twos and threes. If you lose one of those twos and threes, it is a bigger impact. You've got a 36-year-old tight end, and there's only so much you can do to count on Kenneth Walker and those other running backs. At some point, you are going to have to throw the ball and let 15 sling it and take it into his own hands. You lose one of those guys, it is going to be a bigger impact than maybe on some other teams, and I do not want to have to talk about in week 6, week 7, week 8, because Xavier, because Rashee, because Cyrus Allen is injured or struggling with some sort of ailment. I don't want to have to talk about
that's like horseradish.
I don't want to have to talk about him. I do not. Right. Please.
I mean, he's struggling with ailments as well. I mean, it's not like this guy's healthy just sitting out there waiting for an offer from the Chiefs. I mean, the guy can't move his left leg, for God's sake. So, you know, I want to move on from him as quickly as possible. So, the injuries are a big-time thing, and especially, you know, going into this game. I guess this is the most important preseason game. I still haven't really figured it out from the NFL coaches. For all the years with the four, the third one was always that game, right? Yeah. And obviously, the third one isn't going to matter. We're going out to the third game. We're having a celebration for Building Hope for Autism Night and celebrating, you know, a great golf tournament put on by Maria Stone Street. Does an unbelievable job with the foundation, and so we're going to go out and celebrate the foundation that night for the third preseason game, right? You can actually have a celebration. Nobody's going to watch the game, but you can have a celebration and have some fun with all of that for a job well done. And so I guess this is the most important preseason game. But I say I guess because since we've eliminated that fourth preseason game, how much are coaches truly putting in to the preseason? Because I'll go back to, not that this was wrong because I would have done the same thing now, but there was never a time where guys wouldn't travel to a preseason game like we saw the Rams do the other day.
Yeah,
but
no McDuffie, no Jalen Watson, for those who didn't know. They did not travel to KC.
But if I'm Sean McVay, why am I putting my players through that when you're going to Australia here pretty quick, right? The less travel, the better for the guys that kind of need to be on the field and playing. And so you take the air travel and all of that kind of stuff away, and you allow them to relax at home. I think it was the absolute right move, Mac, for these guys to make by not bringing those guys here. So that's why I question, how much do these coaches really now put into the preseason? What game truly matters? What truly matters to them? And has the second game become, for lack of a better term, the old third preseason game?
I think 100% it has. This is the dress rehearsal. When you ask, how much do they put into it? What do you mean?
You mentioned dress rehearsal. Like, how much of this is real game, right? Because you're not going to have a dress rehearsal if you're the Chiefs because your quarterback isn't playing at that, you know? So how much are you really putting into it? Is it and also, too, a dress rehearsal in week two seems early. Like, week three felt better. You had 3 weeks under your belt, and games and all that kind of stuff. Obviously, it's a rush. I'm not asking for more exhibition football at all. But I just wonder now, with it being three games, if you took a poll of all these coaches, how much emphasis are they truly putting on these preseason games, maybe compared to what they used to in the past?
I'd also be curious about a poll from the coaches specifically on four versus three preseason games. And now we're talking about two preseason games. I mean, eventually week one preseason is going to be your dress rehearsal, because week two is going to be your audition, which is right now what this last preseason game, the one that you're talking about going to next week, will be. That'll be the audition for the Melvin Smiths and the Godricks of the world, right? That'll be their time to really say, okay, I can make this roster. Watch me make a play. This week is the real dress rehearsal. And yes, there's going to be no Patrick Mahomes, but that's because of an injury. If he was healthy, he'd be out there. And I want Chris Jones to be out there more than one play. I want Travis Kelce to get a couple of plays with this new offense, because it is a new offense, at least from the first week and the training camp videos that we've seen. I think we've seen Andy Reid actually listen to a lot of the fans and listen to everyone around the National Football League media and say, okay, it's time to make some changes. It's time to run more under center. It's time to have true play action passes. We saw that in the first preseason game. He may be, you know, leading us astray and saying, oh, psych, week one of regular season. But right now it looks like this is a new system, a refreshed system, and it's a new team.
Yeah.
And so I want to see everyone that can play be out there. And that's especially not just the older guys, but obviously all those younger guys that haven't played too. Mansoor Delane. We need to see Peter Woods even more, in my opinion. The young guy's ability, it's all about Andy Reid changing, and so we need to see all these guys be a part of that change. If he doesn't change this offense, then it really doesn't matter.
Yeah, and so far, so good. But Josh and I used to sit around and we'd talk about the preseason and be like, look, man, this is a great time where Andy can go out there and just do wild stuff and make teams prepare for stuff that they're never going to see, too. And so there's a little bit of gamesmanship that's involved in the preseason. As you're getting ready for the Denver Broncos and you're putting these three preseason games on tape, they're going to be looking at that kind of stuff, right? So maybe you're doing stuff and putting in wrinkles and doing all kinds of crazy stuff that you're never going to use just to try to convince the Denver Broncos and these other teams to prepare for stuff, because that's where the Chiefs were so good in the past, making teams prepare for stuff that they weren't ever going to see. And so, yeah, I think it probably could be the dress rehearsal, but I don't know. This is just my feeling and I have no facts or anything. It feels kind of early for a dress rehearsal when we still have about a month to go before that first game, right? And again, I'm not asking for more preseason football. I'm just having that conversation of like, because you're right. It is a dress rehearsal, but a dress rehearsal a month before the main act is, it's kind of eerily early in my opinion.
It is. It is early. I get it. It is just the situation that the leagues put the teams in and put us in. So this is really their only option to be able to do
correct.
This. I'll also say the kind of camouflaging or trying to show something one thing and then do another in the regular season, all that stuff's great. The gamesmanship, I love it. We don't have that privilege anymore.
You're right. You're right.
They've lost that privilege.
Yeah.
The offense has deterred the last 3 years and eroded the last three seasons. It's time to get back on the horse and show us what you got. And that takes a new, refreshed offense. And I think Andy Reid gets that message.
Yeah, he does. No, and that's the thing, again, about Andy Reid before we get to one word. This guy does change. People look at Andy Reid and go, oh, he's never going to. Andy Reid has evolved more than any other coach I've ever been
around.
That's
why I'm still here.
It's exactly why. It's why I'm still here.
One word.
First name is Blake, and he goes on a cruise. He goes on a Caribbean cruise.
Katie Holmes.
No. Ah!
Are you listening?
What's your least favorite thing about working with yourself?
Body odor.
You get one word.
On the count of three, name your favorite dinosaur. One, two, three.
Velociraptor.
This is One Word on Fesco and Dusty.
One, two, three.
Oatmeal raisin. That's right. One word on a Tuesday brought to you by Maloney, Sandtrap, and The Landing. Three great, awesome local spots. They have delicious food, they have cold drinks, and they have walls galore of TVs ready to watch your favorite sports team, all three with outdoor patio seating. And we mentioned the weather, man. It's getting better. It's getting a little nicer this morning, more fall, crisp. And so you can go out there and sit outside and watch Bobby and Cags maybe become the best sports duo in Kansas City. You can go out and watch the preseason games this weekend and go out and watch whatever else you want to go watch at Maloney's Sand Trap and Landing today at Maloney's Meatball Sub. Homemade meatballs served on a toasted hoagie with marinara and mozzarella. Your choice of fries, chips on the side, only $14. They're available every day until the end of the month. Tacos and burritos on a Tuesday, $4.50 Mexican beers and margaritas, and then $6 for a double marg. You can really get it going. You can get it going today at Maloney's.
Yeah, Maloney's nickname is actually Meatball Sub. That's what he was called in college.
I feel like that's not a lie.
No, it's not.
That's real.
Very true. Yeah, that's why it's on the menu. Yeah.
That's fantastic. All right, let's start right here on our home turf. We mentioned the Cyrus Allen play to start the show. Yesterday, he made a great sideline catch from Justin Fields. He kind of bobbled it one hand, was able to secure it. And then you saw him get 2 feet inbounds on the sideline. If you've not seen it yet, we've got all the local reporters have shared this play. Underdog NFL has shared this play. You can just look up Cyrus Allen, left-hand catch. You'll be able to see it. But yeah. One word on the play.
In, as in all in. I am all in on Cyrus Allen right now being a major impact for this team. You can't teach what he's doing. You can't teach athleticism. You can't teach, you know, the ability to go up with one hand and come down. I mean, like, you can tell them to do that kind of stuff, but to have the ability to go do that as a fifth-round draft pick, I think by the time we reach October, everybody in the NFL is talking about Cyrus Allen as the most missed-on draft pick in the entire draft.
That could be true. There's actually a couple candidates from Brett Veach's draft class early. I mean, Emmett Johnson might be one of
those. Emmett Johnson's going to be in that category.
He's going to be in that category. This is looks early, but it does look like this could be a Veach master class, which is exactly what we needed to do if this dynasty was going to continue.
I'm just going to say this right now. It's looking better than the 22 class.
Yeah. Honestly, you might be right, considering, again, we haven't even seen Mansoor Delane play yet, and that is the guy that he coveted the most, obviously, traded up for at the number 6 pick. If he's Pro Bowl worthy already in year one all of a sudden, and you've done what... I mean, yeah, no, this could be a Veach masterclass, and yeah. I could be eating my words for these last couple of years. How about Fandom Index, baby? Chiefs coming in at number 2. They took a bunch of rankings based on apparel purchases, TV viewership, radio listening, event attendance, streaming, and just overall interest level. Buffalo came in at 1, KC 2, Green Bay number 3, Cincinnati 4, Philadelphia number 5. One word.
Normal. I think that's a good list right there.
Yeah,
like
solid.
That's one of the best lists of fandom that I've seen. Buffalo is Buffalo is just insane. They jump through fire tables. Yeah. I mean, tables that are on fire and all that kind of stuff. Nobody else does that. And so in Kansas City, we're number 2. And that's great, man, because we're not jumping through tables on fire. If we start jumping through tables on fire, we'll probably move up to number 1. But you look at Buffalo, Kansas City, and Green Bay. Those are the 3 best places to see a game in the NFL. Well, Buffalo's old stadium, it would have been. You know, I don't know how the new stadium is, right?
Yeah,
but you just think of the crowds, right?
The atmosphere.
The atmosphere.
No, I'm with you.
What's Buffalo? Kind of like here. What's Green Bay? Kind of like here. You know, I've never been to Buffalo, but I have been to Green Bay, and obviously I've been to Arrowhead. Amazing venues. Always wanted to go to a game in that old Buffalo stadium, and I never did. I don't know that I have an interest in the new one because it's not going to have that same feel, but those fans, yeah, they're diehards up there in Buffalo. Is New York, number 30.
Yeah, number 30. Yeah, again,
look at what number 29 is.
LA 29. You got the huge markets there at the bottom of the list, which makes sense. The only one that was really surprising is Boston at 21. That's what seemingly is a great sports town with great fans. That was the most surprising one to me.
Well, the last couple of years, you know, in Boston, you know, with New England, haven't been great. And so now they bounce back.
Super Bowl, yeah.
Yeah, but that's just 1 year. The last couple of years, you know. And really, when you're starting to play good, fans don't get involved until towards the end. We're like, oh, hey, that team's doing good, you know. So, the biggest markets at the bottom, the smallest markets at the top. That's not a surprise to anybody.
Nope.
That's why I've always said, when you're talking about best sports cities, it ain't New York and Boston. It's Kansas City.
Yeah, Binkley texting, and he called me yesterday talking about Jacoby Lane. Now we've got a 913 texter talking about Jacoby Lane, a Ravens wide receiver. He says it'll be the most talked about draft pick. And you and Binkley both agree. How about this? I don't know if I agree with any of this. Mark Walter, he sold all his shares, which was the majority stake of Chelsea FC Premier League team. He's selling what was owned of the Lakers, and now he's talks about selling what he has in the Dodgers. Again, majority stake, because he's got financial problems, because he's got insurance companies down his back because of the things that he's done with the Dodgers to secure this super team and to secure this mini dynasty he's had. And then you've got the whole Buss family, erroneously, apparently, Shams reporting yesterday erroneously that Jeannie Buss and the Buss family had sold their near 18% shares in the Lakers. Jeannie saying, no, I'm not. Lawyer saying, no, she hasn't. One word on all this drama.
Wild and awesome. I mean, this family drama being played out in the media that involves professional sports. Where do I get my popcorn for this one? We all have family drama, right? Raise your hand if your family's normal. There ain't a hand going up, right?
Yeah.
A lot of our family drama don't get played out like this. They're saying the vote was 5-1 because there's 6 Buss siblings. five voted no. Jeannie voted to keep the team. She claims her vote supersedes the five because she's the governor of the team. This is wild. Also wild is that the Lakers have now sold twice in a year. This Mark Walter guy, I mean, they sold twice in a year because they're being run by a crook.
Yeah.
This Mark Walter guy is selling everything.
And he still doesn't have enough money to cover his ass for what he's done with the Dodgers. I mean, this could be a good sign for maybe Major League Baseball. That TV deal that the Dodgers got from loopholes a few years back has really kind of been able to soar and let them coast to having this team. Maybe that'll help Major League Baseball, help decrease the lockout.
Well, here's what I'll say about that. It's going to be very interesting to watch. And I'd love to know what the players are thinking about all this, too, because they're the ones that are going to have a say in how long this thing goes. But when you look at what they're doing out in L.A. right now, and this guy having to sell all of these teams, man, he could go up the river. I mean, I don't know, but the TV deal that the Dodgers have, let me put it in perspective for you, and this is real numbers. The Dodgers got $300 million just handed to them for their TV deal by whoever it is that's paying for this now, Sportsnet L.A. Okay? Great. Good job out of you. The Royals made about 10% of that money this year on their TV deal. You know where their money came from for their TV deal? Us buying subscriptions and them selling advertising.
Yeah.
So the Royals only get 10% of what the Dodgers get. And in order to get that 10%, the Royals have to go out there and hustle and sell and do advertising and sell streaming services. And the Dodgers just sit back and they get a check for $300 million. How does that make sense in Major League Baseball? I don't think baseball needs a salary cap or floor. I've been on the record saying that. They need all the TV money to be pooled and then divided by 30, and that will change the entire game. So instead of the Dodgers getting $300 million just handed to them with a TV contract and the Royals having to scrape and claw and fight for every freaking nickel on their TV deal, combine them all and divide by 30. And that's how you solve this inequity in Major League Baseball. It's not that hard.
Cam Newton, former NFL MVP, was at Missouri's football camp yesterday. He's been a mentor to wide receiver Caden Lee over the years. He even helped him make the decision to transfer to MU. One word. What? He was over there in the MU sweatshirt.
Neat.
Catching footballs, hanging out, laughing.
Yeah, it's cool to have like randos show up, right? Yeah. Like, why is that guy there, you know?
Well, and that's a guy all those 18, yeah, they probably were watching. I mean, I don't know, maybe that's more my age.
Well, that's the 2014-15 Super Bowl year, right?
Yeah.
Roughly in that age range. So that's 11 years ago, let's say, 12 years ago.
So they were
ago.
Like 7.
Yeah.
Yeah, so maybe right before they would have really cared.
Yeah.
Maybe that's more my thing. Yeah, yeah. That's fair. Yeah. No, I mean, Cam Newton was awesome. For that one season.
Yeah, he for that fantastic. One season. It was great. Yeah.
Was so good.
But people know who Cam Newton is. That's still a cool deal.
Yeah, cool. And he looks huge.
Does he really?
I mean, he's 6'5". He's still got all of his muscles. Yes, he's massive.
Cool. Can he go out there and play?
He looks like it. Yes. Maybe he's still got eligibility.
That is one word brought to you by our good friends over at Maloney's.
Yes.
The Landing and the Sand Trap.
Yes. And today at Maloney's, get that meatball sub, homemade meatball served.
Just order the Rob today.
Order the Rob, man. Toasted hoagie, marinara, mozzarella, your choice of fries for $14. Then again, tacos, burritos, $4.50, Mexican beers and margaritas, $6 double margaritas. Make sure and get over there.
All right. Coming up here on 96.5, The Fan, we're going to delete two teams forever next.
Good morning, Kansas City. It's Marcel Delane, and you're listening to Fesco and Dusty on your home for Chiefs football, 96.5 The Fan.
The new AP poll is out for college football. Jay Binkley is a voter in that. He'll join us tomorrow in 23 hours from now. Jay Binkley will join us here on 96.5. The Fan. Ohio State, of course, comes in at number one. The rest doesn't matter. Their AP rankings, number one. Their college football playoff odds ranking are number one as well. Oregon comes in as two. Their college football playoff odds ranking two as well. Georgia three. Their fifth best college football playoff odds. Notre Dame comes in at fourth. They are the second best, tied with Oregon and then Texas as your top five in your preseason poll. And so Texas is the ultimate fraud in all of this, right? I mean, like every year we think Texas is going to be good, and every year Texas isn't what they are expected to be. It's going to be very interesting to see kind of the Arch Manning situation there this year. Now, he should be able to play and be a stud and be a star.
Yeah, I think they'll be pretty good.
Right there, down there in Texas. So we'll have to see if they actually live up to their
Missouri in the top 25.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, they should be in the top 25. That's a spot for them. They should strive for that every single year of being in the top 25. They're 25th, and they're tied for 20th with the best odds to reach the college football playoff at 100-1. So there you go. So good job out of Missouri. And I you know, if you're Missouri, 8-5 is probably the type of record that you want to have and have a chance towards the end of the season to be playing for a shot potentially at the college football playoff, I think.
Oh man, 8-5 would be
bad. You think
that's bad?
9-4 somewhere in there.
I think we played David Pollock's audio the other year or the other week about Missouri. I think they kind of walk into 10 wins these last few seasons. I think that is the standard. Win 10 games. Now, that's really tough to do in the SEC, but yeah, I think 9 would be your floor. And you're aiming for that 10 win spot.
Yeah, and now with the extra game in the SEC too, it may be harder for everybody to get to that 10 win spot if they're as good as everybody says.
True.
That they are in the SEC. Coming up in about 10 minutes or so, we'll do my bonehead of the week. There was a brouhaha last night that was epic. There's a cool, fun little thing. Total Pro Sports had it going around, and it was a NFL map, right? And the listing of all the NFL teams. You can delete two NFL teams forever. Who are you getting rid of? Right? You can delete two forever. Who are you getting rid of? And the immediate thought is probably, well, the Raiders, the Broncos, the Chargers, teams like that. No. Cincinnati is number one on my list.
There we go. Okay, yes. I knew we would agree on this.
Cincinnati
that's one of mine too.
Can hit the bricks. You know who else can get bent?
Get bent.
Philly.
Ooh, oh, that's a good one. Yeah, the fans are annoying. Mm-hmm. They've beaten us in the Super Bowl. Yeah, I get that. Right? I'm with that. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, they're mainly their fans, though, and their coach.
Yeah, their coach is where I lean towards
total
that.
Total D.
Yeah, he is, yeah.
Yeah, I kind of lean towards irrelevance here on the second one because I'm with you on the first one. I'm just going to go pure hatred and vitriol. And even though it's been 5 years now since the whole Burrowhead, all that BS, it still sticks with you. I still don't like their fans. I could see our guy Drew, who I love, but every day he comes in here and every year it's the same thing, talking about how awesome Joe Burrow is. Well, I'd like to see him in the playoffs just one more time because it's been 5 years and also hasn't been able to make it without an awesome, stellar defense like he had that first time he made the Super Bowl and beat the Chiefs. Yeah, so I'd like to see him do that again. I'm going to get rid of a more irrelevant team, and it does make me feel bad, but we talk about this team being irrelevant, maybe the most irrelevant franchise in National Football League. I'll go the Arizona Cardinals.
Oh, okay.
They don't do anything for me.
Yeah.
Don't really care about them. Other than that Super Bowl when I was a child with, Larry Fitzgerald against the Steelers and all that, which was a fantastic game, one of the best Super Bowls. What do they really do for me? I don't really care for them. It's not going to do much for me if they're gone and if they're not on my foursquare here coming about a month. So I'm going to get rid of the Arizona Cardinals and the Cincinnati Bengals.
Okay, those are the two you'd get rid of. Text line, who are you getting rid of in the NFL? 913-586-7965. What are the two teams that you would get rid of? You mentioned the irrelevant teams, and I think real fast we can go through some of the irrelevant teams in the NFL.
Yep.
Arizona's irrelevant from a fan base perspective. I'm just going to say this because this is all kind of fan related to me.
Yeah, fan related.
Chargers are irrelevant. Carolina's irrelevant.
You think Carolina's on that
list? Yeah, I do. Yeah.
Okay.
Jacksonville is an irrelevant team.
Definitely would put them up there.
I would also probably put, again, this is fan stuff, the Rams I put up there on that list. I mean, you saw the fan index earlier, the Rams and the Giants and the Jets, the New York teams are all out. They don't have real fan bases out there. And if you don't have a fan base in your own town, like the Rams would be good if they were like the national team.
If America had
a national team, the Rams would be more relevant than they are being the Los Angeles Rams because they're in a market that the teams just don't care about them. But overall irrelevancy, I think it's Arizona, I think it's Carolina, and I think it's Jacksonville. Those are the three to me that kind of pop as irrelevant NFL teams. Anybody on your list?
I think the Titans are high on that list.
Ooh, that's a good one.
Yeah, the Titans are high on that list. The Volunteers own that state. Yeah. College Sports own that state. I lived there for quite some time. They've definitely got fans. I'm not saying they don't exist, but it's not like...
Can you believe they've already been through two stadiums now in Nashville?
That's ridiculous.
It shows you how long these things last, man, and how outdated they become and how fast they become outdated because, they've been there almost 30 years now.
coming up on 30 years here.
You weren't even alive when they were the Houston Oilers.
No, I wasn't. I think one of their first seasons. Maybe I was for 1 year, depending on if it was 98, 99, because I was born in 98. So I don't know.
I swear they moved in 96, bro.
Yeah, you might be right.
That could be the case. Yeah, but it feels like that.
No, that could be the case. And if that's the case, then yeah, it's been 30 years. So yeah, they haven't ever seen the Houston Oilers. But yeah, I think the Titans are probably on that list. And it also shows, you talk about stadiums, shows you how stuff just isn't built the same way
that
it used to be built. You just kind of stick stuff up there. But yeah, Nissan is a concrete jungle, and they'll be excited about that new stadium that's standing, that's up there, that's ready to go.
It's looking big. It looks massive, right? It looks really cool. Looks awesome. But that goes to show you, you know, where you are in life. And, you know, we're constantly talking about, you know, these new stadiums that are going up right now. So, yeah, those are some of the irrelevant teams, I think, right now in the NFL. And then we've got this pain and suffering chart for NFL fans put out by Sleeper NFL.
Yeah.
And they rank teams by fan suffering historically. And there's two teams in the category called literally a utopia. And it's New England and Kansas City in there. Well, yeah, the last 10 years
were
literally.
Yeah, but if we're talking about history?
No. If we're talking about history, I would say we're not in the category of hell where you have Cleveland, the Jets, the Raiders, the Cardinals, and the Dolphins. I don't think we're pure agony where you have the Chargers, the Falcons, the Lions, the Bears, teams like that. Miserable fans, we're not in that category. I would say this is where we are really overall as an organization is on and off.
On and off. I agree.
On and off.
Yeah, because there's above on and off is no suffering, and then where the Chiefs are literally utopia.
Yeah,
I'd put us in the on and off category, and this whole list is a little off to me. Like the Niners being in on and off, no, they're in no suffering. The Steelers being in miserable fans,
no, they're
they're
in probably no suffering or on and off too.
Like the Vikings being in miserable fans, I'd put them in pure agony. I would put them in pure agony. I'd move up. Yeah, honestly, that whole is
which would you put as a literal utopia? I don't think any team is a literal utopia.
I could move up the Eagles because they've been great my whole life. I don't know about all of history, but man, they're constantly relevant.
But they also have fans that are constantly miserable too.
That's true. So because they do that to themselves.
How can it be literally a utopia when every fan is miserable about that team, even when they won the Super Bowl?
I'd put the Broncos in a utopia potentially. I know they've had a bad, 8 or 9 year stretch, but they're not on and off. They're in the on and off category. Yeah. Now they're at least no suffering.
Yeah.
I mean, my God, they've had one of the best offenses 10 years ago in all of history. They're relevant again. We're in the AFC Championship game, are a contender, and they own the later 90s.
Yeah.
So I would put them at least in the no suffering. But yeah, literally utopia. I mean, and for the Patriots, for that matter, my God, think about how terrible and how irrelevant they were for all of NFL history. And
Brady and Belichick.
Pre the 21st century, that was a dumpster fire.
Again, that team almost moved to St. Louis in the 90s.
Yes.
That's how bad it was in New England. They almost moved the Patriots to St. Louis in the 90s.
Robert Kraft wouldn't let him.
No, Robert Kraft had the best deal ever. He owned like the stadium or something and wouldn't let the Patriots out of their lease.
Yeah.
And then they said, screw this. We're going to sell the team because the Bush family owned them for 1 year. They go, well, if we can't move them, we're going to sell them. And Kraft got the team for, a song. And here we sit.
And here we are.
And here we sit, right?
Top five most valuable franchise in the league.
Yeah, absolutely. Great business move by him. Coming up here on 96.5 The Fan, we will give you my bonehead of the week next. You're an idiot. You don't know what you're talking about.
Good morning, Kansas City. It's Emmett Johnson, and you're listening to Fesco and Dusty on your home for Chiefs football. 96.5 The Fan.